Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the How Did We Get Here edition, as we look ahead to Sunday's game in Denver between the 3-6 Bengals and the 3-6 Broncos. Coming up, we'll hear from the great Boomer Esiason on Andy Dalton, A.J. McCarron, and the Bengals' offensive line. Is this the week that John Ross plays a significant role? We'll hear from the Bengals' rookie. Dave Lapham joins me for an in-depth look at the Denver Broncos, and we'll wrap things up on this podcast with an edition of The Last Lap. In honor of the Broncos' GM, John Elway, I'm going to ask Lap to look back at his 40-plus years as an NFL player or broadcaster and answer a bunch of questions about quarterbacks he played against or has watched. Like, who had the strongest arm? Who was the smartest? Who was the toughest? Who had the reddest hair? You get the picture. Before we get to all of that, here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since the camera phone. Unless, of course, you're a celebrity. If that's the case, the camera phone sucks. This offseason, when fans and media selected the Bengals' first 50, the list of the top 50 retired players in team history, Boomer Esiason came in number 8. Boomer will be among the players honored at halftime of the Monday night game against the Steelers in a few weeks, and I imagine he'll be broadcasting that game for Westwood One Radio. That is among his many broadcasting gigs. You can see him on Sunday on the NFL Today on CBS. You can see him during the week on Showtime's Inside the NFL. And if you live in the Northeast, you can listen to him on the radio every morning on WFAN in New York. Despite all of that, Boomer was kind enough to join Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan Show on Wednesday night. All right, Boomer, let's face it. The Bengals offensive line is not very good these days. How does that affect a quarterback?
Well, you know, it affects us in a lot of different ways. And, you know, we get hit a lot and there's a lot of miscommunication and there's not a lot of confidence on the offensive line. And it basically affects everything that you do. And I don't want to sit here and blame everything on the offensive line of the Cincinnati Bengals. Sometimes you have to play through stuff, kind of like Kirk Cousins is doing in Washington. You know, that guy competes every single game. Doesn't matter who's standing in front of him. Five no names, five guys that have never met each other before. And somehow he still makes plays and he still is dynamic enough to keep his team in games, and they're not going to win all those games simply because of the injuries that they're having. So they're kind of like on a parallel path along the lines with the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, I just think there's more to it than that. There's third downs, both offensively and defense that are defensively that are killing them. There are two wide receivers that basically right now, whether it be John Royce, Ross and Tyler Boyd, that are just not, you know, holding up their end of the bargain. They're not the players that I think everybody was hoping they were going to be this year, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, LaFell is getting a chance to play as much as he is. The running back situation muddled when you draft Joe Mixon, and all of a sudden Jeremy Hill's upset, and then Giovanni Bernard, their touches are never going to happen. So I just kind of feel like watching Cincinnati each and every week, they've just never found their rhythm, guys, and offensively it's frustrating. You know, I look at Andy's statistics, and I'm like, you know, he's better than the 16th rated quarterback in the league. He should be a top 10 quarterback. He's a guy that's committed to the team. He's a guy that everybody seems to respect. He should be better accurately than throwing better accuracy than he is. There should be more touchdown passes. You know, A.J. Green can't get thrown out of a game because Jalen Ramsey gets under his skin. Vontaze Burfict's got to be careful out on the field. He can't get thrown out of a game. Marvin's in the last year of his contract. I mean, am I touching enough things as you to understand why they are where they are right now? I totally get it. I can see it from a mile away.
Boomer, amongst all the remarkable things that you've done in your life, the most remarkable for me, and we talked about it earlier in the show when we were talking about the privilege of catching up with you later on in the show, is what you've done with the cystic fibrosis, your efforts to just try to eliminate that, you know, due to Gunner's affliction. And to me as a father, Dan's a father, there's a lot of fathers out there listening. That's just unbelievable. You know, you can feel it to the very inner chambers of your heart. What you're doing for your son and what you're doing for not only your son but everybody afflicted with the disease. How do you find time, Boomer, to do everything you do with that, with everything else you're doing?
Well, I don't know. I don't even really think about it. I know that you guys listed the amount of jobs that I have. The reason I have those jobs is always to stay relevant, to make sure that I'm out there, that people recognize me. And there's always that tinge of CF everywhere I go. So every company that I work for, every company that I do business with, all has to, in some way, shape, or form, support our foundation. And, you know, we've raised over, you know, $130 million, Dave. And a lot of that is due to the people that are behind me that support me. So Dave Remington and Lee Becker and Tammy Amaker have been with me since day one, since Gunner's diagnosis at Cincinnati's Children's Hospital. So, and we have just tried to, you know, push forward. They know that I'm tireless when it comes to stuff like this. And, you know, the interesting thing for me, Dave, I don't know if you knew this, but Gunner was at Cincinnati Children's this past weekend.
Really?
He gave a speech there, yes. And, you know, these are trips that I used to have to make that I don't have to make anymore. So Gunner has actually taken the mantle from me in many ways. He has really become the voice and the face of our foundation, because he's the reason why we're here in the first place doing what we're doing. So he's done so much stuff, and he was out in Cincinnati this week, and he goes, "Dad, you're not going to believe how many people wore your jersey to my talk." And I'm like, you know, Gunner, that's awesome. That just means that there's a legacy that lives on in Cincinnati, due in large part to you and what disease that you're fighting and the young man that you've grown up to be. So it's kind of easy for me. I mean, I get about 4 hours of sleep a day, so I'm not worried about, you know, lasting or any of that kind of stuff. I'm just worried about just pushing forward, and you just never know what hurdle you're going to have to jump over next. But at this moment, with Gunner being 26 years of age and him really taking the mantle from me, he's relieved a lot of pressure off of me. But on the same token, he's put a lot of pressure on himself. And I have to tell you, Dave, as a dad, I couldn't be any more proud of what he has grown up to be and how he is and how he handles his disease. So we're not stopping. We're going to continue to go, and he wants to keep, you know, keep going, pressing forward, and being aggressive. And I'm going to follow his lead at this point.
It's incredible, man. Congratulations to everybody.
Well, incredible. You know, the great thing is, really, honestly, you know, so many people before us lost their loved ones to cystic fibrosis, and the reason that Cystic Fibrosis Foundation out of Bethesda, Maryland, has been so successful throughout the years bringing new drugs from the test tube to the patient is because it's basically been run by parents of CF children. So I'm kind of an extension of that. And when Gunner was diagnosed in Cincinnati back in 1993, Frank DeFord, who lost a daughter at the age of 8 to cystic fibrosis, and we lost Frank this past year, you know, said to me, he goes, "Boomer, this is like a blessing. You know, we need somebody to put a name and a face on this disease. And if you guys would be willing, it would really be helpful." So I look at it as, you know, it's kind of a cross to bear, certainly when you're putting everything out there publicly. But I also understand that there's a lot of power to that. And, you know, from 93 until 2017 and all these people working with me and supporting me, and then Gunner growing up to the young man that he's been, it has really been quite the story and quite the ride. And we've been very, very successful with it. So I want Gunner to outlive me, and he's doing a hell of a job doing that right now, I can tell you that.
That's great, Boomer. That's great.
Our guest is Boomer Esiason, and want to get back to a couple of football questions before we let you go. Boomer, as you know, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy in town when a team is not doing particularly well. And, you know, fans naturally here are starting to say, hey, if the season goes down the tubes, they should play A.J. McCarron and see what they've got. What do you think of that, and would that be damaging to Andy Dalton's future with the Bengals?
I know if I were Andy, I probably would not like that. I'm always speaking from for myself. I don't want to speak for Andy. I'm just saying that we starting quarterbacks are A-type personalities, and we don't ever like to be second guessed. And I lived many years in Andy's shoes, like he's going through this year. It's a tough year. You really truly find out about somebody, and I know Andy's a high character guy, so I know that he has thick skin, and I know he can handle this. And, you know, the other thing that you have to decide is, you know, I don't know what they're doing with the coaching staff out there. I don't know if they're keeping Marvin, if Marvin's retiring, and, you know, if he's retiring, is there anybody on the staff that could replace him? These are all questions, obviously, that Mike and Pete and everybody else out there have to answer. And I don't think they want to ask those questions or answer those questions just yet. I probably want to take some time away from the game after the emotion of everything and the season's over with to make what they hope is going to be the right decision for everybody involved. I would just say this. You know, Buffalo is kind of doing that right now. It seems like they want to Nathan Peterman simply because they want to find out exactly what they have, or maybe they want to lose games and try to rise in the draft. You know, maybe they're a little unexpected that they have 5 wins right now. So every team is a little bit different. I know who the unquestioned leader of that team is. I know it's Andy Dalton. So I know if it were me and I were in that situation, I'd be swinging if they wanted to take me off the field. No disrespect to A.J. McCarron. It's just that I'm the starter, and that's the way I feel about it. When I went through it back in 1992, I believe it was, with David Klingler, it was clear that he was going to be the next quarterback. They drafted him fifth or fourth overall. I was basically had one foot out the door, and the Brown family was nice enough to send me to where I wanted to go. So I don't think Andy is anywhere near that, and I think that Andy's best years are still in front of him, believe it or not.
Boomer, final question. Appreciate it as always. You carving time because you are the best I've ever met at time management, to say the least. But it's incredible. But hypothetical, you have a rookie receiver who is out on the football field, hasn't played a whole lot of snaps, has had some injuries, but he gets in the football game, and he's supposed to run a 9 route, get down the football field. He's not necessarily your first option on this particular play. He might be your third or fourth option. But during the course of that route, he decides that since he might not be your primary option, he's going to stop his route. But you throw the football to him and take him down the football field, and the ball's 10 or 15 yards down the field further than he is. What would you say to that rookie wide receiver who just decided to just stop his route? What would the quarterback's react?
Rookies, I play with Eddie Brown. He was like that a little bit. You know, they kind of take things for granted. And I played with Wayne Corbett his first year in New York. I mean, that was interesting, to say the least. And, these are just part and parcel of the problems that you deal with on a daily basis with all sorts of rookies. You know, I remember when Andy Dalton was a rookie quarterback and how that affected everybody around him and how they had to support him. And it's easy to say, okay, it's a rookie, it's his fault. Ross made a mistake. I'm assuming that's what you're talking about.
So
he made a mistake, and he'll learn from that mistake. That's what your rookie season's all about. It's about learning who you are. What the NFL is all about. How competitive it is each and every week. And if you don't bring, what you need to bring every single Sunday, you're going to get your ass handed to you. So I think that's kind of where the Bengals are right now. It seems to me, that they're probably. It's a combustible situation. There's no question about that. And we got to wait until the end of the year gets here before decisions start being made. And when you're dealing with young players, I remember it was Corey Dillon his rookie year, and I can't tell you, Dave, how many times I said in the huddle, okay, we're going to run 76 X shell across. You got number 57 in pass protection. You got that?
Right.
And he was like, I got it. Then finally, after about, two or three games, I kept saying to him, all right, you got number 57 in pass protection. Hey, will you shut up? I already got it. I know it. You always have to remind the rookie, and I'm sure it's frustrating, but Andy will continue to do what he's doing and try to be as good a leader as he possibly can.
Our thanks again to Boomer Esiason for joining us on Bengals Game Plan. Lab's final question involved something that rookie John Ross did or didn't do in last Sunday's Tennessee game. Andy Dalton threw a deep pass down the sideline that never had a chance because Ross stopped running his route. Marvin Lewis criticized the rookie for that at his weekly Wednesday news conference, saying, quote, "The quarterback expects him to understand where he needs him to be. Ross let his teammates down, he let me down, and he let Andy down." End of quote. It's the latest chapter in a disappointing rookie season to date for the number 9 pick in this year's draft. The Bengals have run 513 offensive plays, and largely due to injury, Ross has only been on the field for 17 of them. The only time he touched the ball, John fumbled back in week 2. I spoke to him on Wednesday in front of his locker. Are you patient by nature?
No, but I have to be in order for me to to stay calm and, be where I am. I have to be patient and learn the system and, get my body back and into football shape.
You think maybe this week you get a chance to try to run by somebody?
Whenever they call me, whenever they're ready, I got to be ready. It's not so much of, whenever they say I'm ready, because, I've had opportunities. I just got to do better, and stop thinking so much. I think that's tough for me because I miss so much. I get in, I'm just like, okay, I know what he's going to do. And I don't, because it's totally different. I haven't played against him. I haven't been in that position before, so I'm overthinking every situation.
In addition to not getting a contribution from Ross yet, the Bengals have not had Tyler Boyd for the past 4 games due to a knee injury. Tyler was full go at practice on Wednesday, which happened to be his 23rd birthday. We'll see if one or both of those young receivers is on the active roster this Sunday in Denver. Time to bring back my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. This podcast is being posted on November 16th. 2 years ago on that date, the Bengals lost for the first time all season. They were the last undefeated team standing that year at 8-0 before losing in primetime to the Houston Texans. The Denver Broncos were also pretty good 2 years ago. They won the Super Bowl in Peyton Manning's final NFL season. Now both teams are struggling at 3-6 going into Sunday's game at Sports Authority Field.
And one of the biggest reasons is turnovers. You know, I mean, you can't win football games when you're minus 14 like Denver is. That's dead last in the league. 7 takeaways, 31st in the league. 21 giveaways, 31st in the league for a minus 14 dead last. The Bengals are 8 takeaways, 17 gives, minus 9, 30th. And they're two fumblingest teams in the league. I mean, fumble differential. The Bengals are minus 6, or I should say Denver is minus 6 in the fumble ratio. Fumbles on the ground to fumbles lost, that's tied for second worst in the league. The Bengals lead the NFL, minus 7. They put 10 on the ground, and they've only recovered 3. They're minus 7 dead last in the league. So, you know, respecting the football, ball security, all those things are going to be huge in this football game, and there's no doubt about it. That's what you have to do to compete in the National Football League. You can't give the opposition extra possessions as many times as Denver and Cincinnati are doing.
I am not 100% positive that fumblingist is a word, but if it's not, it should be. Lap back in the 1990s when the Bengals really, really struggled, I used to joke about the special teams gaffe of the week. It seemed like they made one every week. Well, that's the Denver Broncos this year.
It is. I mean, special is not the term for their third phase of football, offense, defense, and special teams. They've been anything but special. And it's an all-important third phase. There's no doubt about it. Against the Patriots, the first time since 1979, a team – their special teams, the Patriots special teams, had a takeaway. There was a muff punt by Isaiah McKenzie, the rookie return guy, who's muffed 5 of them and lost 2. It's incredible. A block punt by our good friend Rex Burkhead, and then a 103-yard kickoff return. And Denver's also given up a 65-yard punt return earlier this season. They're dead last in the NFL covering kickoffs, allowing 28.7 yards per kickoff return. So they are struggling in that area of special teams. And, you know, the offense really isn't that sound. Special teams is terrible. They're minus 14 in the turnover ratio. The only thing they can hang their hat on is they're, you know, fairly solid defensively. But, Dan, I mean, they've lost 5 games in a row by a combined score of 165-68. They've lost by 97 points in the last 5 losses. That is ridiculous, and 2 of the 3 phases are just falling apart. You know, the offense isn't getting it done and turning it over, and special teams is anything but special.
Lap, the Denver Broncos were Super Bowl champs 2 years ago. This year they're 3-6, despite the fact that they still have a lot of great defensive players led by Von Miller, but they're 29th in the NFL in points allowed because they've dealt with a lot of short fields due to turnovers, and they've struggled on special teams.
Yeah, I mean, it's Miller time. You know, you look at the Denver Broncos, and it's all about Von Miller. He was one vote shy of Defensive Player of the Year last year. That was won by Khalil Mack, and deservedly so. But he's dynamic. He's a speed-to-power guy, as good as there is in the NFL. Shane Ray, you know, is another good pass rusher. He had 8 sacks last year, 4 in his last 6 games. He's got tremendous first-step quickness. First pair of cornerbacks on the same team to both be named first-team All-Pro, Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr. So the no-fly zone back there. You know, they get rushers, they get guys in the back end that can plaster you a little bit. They're trying to be the second team in the NFL to lead the league in pass defense 3 straight years. You know, they're trying to be ready to be legendary. And the thing in the past, they have the last couple of years, they're 9-0 when they score a defensive touchdown. So when they get those unscripted, you know, unplanned on scores out of their defense, they're tough to beat. So going to have to really take care of things and really respect and take care of the football this week for sure.
It's been a while since the Bengals won in Denver. In fact, Lapp was still a player. It was his second NFL season, 1975, and Cincinnati has dropped 10 in a row in Denver since. The Broncos GM is their all-time best player and one of the best quarterbacks in history, John Elway. He's the inspiration for a legendary quarterback edition of The Last Lap. I'm going to hit you with a wide variety of quarterback descriptions.
Okay.
And going to ask you for the person that fits the term. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. The quarterback that you saw with the best arm.
Best arm, I'm going to put that as strongest arm, and Terry Bradshaw is a candidate because he could throw the ball literally. I saw him throw the ball 90 yards without taking a run and start. One step and throw it, and he threw it 90 yards. Elway, though, has got that ability. In honor of John Elway, I think that he could throw the ball from the pocket, running to his right, running to his left, unbelievable distances. I saw him throw running to his left one time against the Bengals. The ball was over 60 yards in the air. Moving to his left, I was like, there's only, you know, maybe one other guy in the NFL that could make that throw. So I'd have to go with John Elway.
Strongest arm is John Elway. How about most accurate?
Boy, a couple of guys that one I played with and one I played against. Joe Montana was extremely accurate. There's no doubt. But the guy that I have to give the edge to is my former roommate, Kenny Anderson. And the common denominator is Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh was so good teaching quarterback mechanics. And I think, you know, accuracy came as a result of that. So I'd say Montana and Kenny are the two top that I saw, and I'd have to give it to Kenny.
All right. How about the quarterback with the best feet?
In the pocket with feet, I'd have to go with Bill Walsh, tutored guys. That would be Joe Montana. Steve Young was good in the pocket with his feet, and Kenny was as well. Out of pocket, I'd have to go with Russell Wilson is unbelievable out of pocket with his feet. Fran Tarkenton, though, was amazing, one of the old-school guys that ran around forever. But the guy that I'm going to give it to because of his feet in pocket and out of pocket, Steve Young. Steve Young had the Bill Walsh mechanics in pocket. Then when he got out of pocket, he had such rare speed and footwork. I'm going to have to go with Steve Young. He was great.
I might throw Roger Staubach in there.
Roger the Dodger's pretty good. Excellent, excellent choice.
Throw a bone to a Cincinnati guy.
There you go, Purcell Marion.
All right, how about the overall genetic freak of people that have played the quarterback position?
That would have to be Cam Newton, because when they go nickel packages and they take out the big defensive tackles and they kick ends inside and they put linebackers at rush spots, he's the biggest guy in the field. He's bigger than all the defensive players. I mean, the guy is a freakazoid. You know, how big and massive. I remember when they played that 37-37 tie, he came into the locker room early and started running laps around the field. All he had on was shorts, T-shirt, and a stocking cap over his eyes. I thought, "Whoa, look at that. That guy's put together, that linebacker, that defense." He runs up. It's Cam Newton. I'm like, whoa, Robo QB. He was amazing, amazing.
Michael Vick would be on the short list, yeah. But Cam Newton's got the size and the power in comparison.
Right.
How about the toughest quarterback?
I'd have to go with the old Irishman, Jim Kelly. I mean, that guy, he played quarterback with the attitude of a linebacker. I'd have to say Brett Favre, too. You know, Brett Favre's in that category. Brett Favre played so injured for so many games in a row. I mean, his streak of consecutive games is incredible. So I'd probably have to say, you know, Jim Kelly in the AFC and Brett Favre in the NFC. Brett Favre, to me, was a throwback's throwback. He could have played in any era.
Did you see Jim Kelly in the USFL?
Sure did. Played against him when he was with the Houston Gamblers, and saw him take some shots, you know, in that league as well, and just, you know, come roaring back the very next snap. Yeah, he had us down pretty badly in a game against the Houston Gamblers, and Brian Sipe, our quarterback, rallied us to a victory. But Jim Kelly was special in the USFL.
How about the smartest quarterback?
You know, one other tough quarterback I'm going to mention. Remember Wyatt Tittle with the picture with
the blood dripping down his head?
You'd have to think he's tough for that. But I just thought of that. But the smartest quarterback, you know, I'd say Joe Montana's right up there. I'm not kidding you, Dan. He'd look his first, second reads to the front side, and without even looking, come back to the backside and hit that third option because he knew it was going to be open based on what he saw on the front side. He was so smart. And Bill Walsh, you know, leaned on that. You know, I have to go with Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady's unbelievable. That guy just – it's hard to make adjustments that would stymie Tom Brady. He's seen everything. He's executed against everything. I'd have to put him right up there.
How about Peyton Manning?
Yeah, that's another one, no question. Peyton Manning would – he's like a coach on the field. I remember talking to, his offensive coordinator.
Tom Moore.
Tom Moore for all those years, yeah. And he said that you had to be on your toes because Peyton Manning would – find the one mistake you might have made. And it's like having the smartest kid in the class, you know, in your room with just two other guys every single day. He upped the ante. He upped the level. He set a high bar for not only his teammates but for his coaches to coach at a real high level too. But yeah, Peyton Manning was he's brilliant as well. You're right.
You know, forget about all of that. You just totally botched this question. The smartest quarterback in history is Ryan Fitzpatrick.
That's right, the Harvard grad.
The yes. Harvard grad with the near yes. perfect Wunderlich, yes. not quite a Pat McAnally. All right. How about the greatest leader among quarterbacks?
You know, I'd have to – the way Tom Brady plays the game, you know, he's like just so competitive. And he just gets every last ounce of effort out of his teammates. And that's the way he played it as well. But I'd have to go with our guest earlier this evening. I mean, Boomer Esiason takes over a room. Boomer Esiason takes over a huddle. You know, I'm not saying Tom Brady doesn't and won't continue to, but that's the greatest leader that I've ever seen. And I saw it firsthand. I mean, I remember the first time driving down to Spinney Field, and I heard him. I heard him on a football field. I didn't have to see him. I heard this voice carrying as I'm driving down under the viaduct. I'm like, what is that? Who is that? Boomer Esiason. I mean, he just projected. I mean, everything about Boomer was big and powerful and, you know, and he commanded it. Dan, I remember the last five games before we went to the broadcast booth, the Bengals go 4-1. They bring him basically out of mothballs. And the only game they lost to Philadelphia 44-41. And I was in the locker room before the players got in there back then. Boomer Esiason comes in, takes his helmet off, throws it at the defensive players, said, "You guys should be embarrassed. Don't pick up your paychecks. You don't deserve them. I can't believe you let them score." You know, Bobby Goins was the quarterback. The
guy from Hoying. Ohio State. Hoying. Hoying, yeah.
From Ohio State.
Yeah.
Bobby Hoying was the quarterback. He said, "You let Hoying hang 44 on you guys? You guys you don't deserve your paychecks. We should have won that football." Boomer was, that's the kind of leader he was, though. He called everybody out. He was all over it.
I wish you would have brought that up when we had him on early on the show. One last final wild card category for you. Quarterback with the reddest hair.
I'd have to go Red Rifle for sure.
No question about it.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and do me a favor and give it a rating, preferably 5 stars, or leave a comment. It would be great to know how many of you are listening and what you think. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.